Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You literally
cannot hide from the woman now. She is just like, this meeting is being recorded. Everything you say shall be held against you.
Danny Dyer on the mic, letting us know that we have to do a more formal introduction than usual. So this is the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP.
UBP.
I'm Scott Tilford, your host, joined by Mr. Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
For a weekly roundup of general thoughts, opinions, whatever hell else is on people's minds, because it's been a big old week for gaming news, for different gaming announcements, and there's quite a lot of people sent some stuff in about the next God of War, God of War 2, God of War Ragnarok, whatever you want to call it, and now coming to PlayStation 4. We'll get to that in a bit, because something that just broke before we hit the record button is the new Borderlands spin-off called Wonderlands, which apparently is a Tiny Tina-based spin-off. Now, we did just cover this on the channel itself. We do have a big old news video you can go and check out, which I think will be an audio rip on this feed as well. But I wanted to see what you think, because Jules, you're the biggest Borderlands fan that I know. What do you think of them picking big old Tiny Tina and doing a spin-off for her?
Well, of course, I'm excited to see that the love of my life, outside of Gary, obviously, and my cats, Ashley Birch, is getting another voiceover gig as Tiny Tina, reprising the role that made her so utterly lovable. Because basically, I don't know if you've ever watched her YouTube series that she did with her brother, age and age ago. Hey, Ash, what are you playing?
Yeah, I've not seen it.
She's basically that character, kind of like spunky, annoying, very off the wall. Mm-hmm. And it sort of evolved, that character has got more depth now, because obviously after the death of Roland, she sort of fleshed out that character with a bit more emotional gravitas. So yes, I'm very excited to have something that focuses on her. Mm-hmm. Plus, with the title being Wonderland, we might be able to infer from that we're going to get gameplay that actually is from her perspective. You know, when we were playing the Dungeons & Dragons, Bunkers and Badasses, which was the DLC for Borderlands 2.
If it's called Wonderlands, maybe you flesh that whole, maybe it's all in her head or something.
Yeah, exactly. And then that way it could be her coming to terms with the stuff that's happened throughout her life and coming to peace with it. If they took the craziness and over-the-top nature of Borderlands and actually had it say a message, which was you can go back and address difficult parts of your life and move on from them, that would actually make this franchise, which, let's face it, the third Borderlands was a very, very well-constructed shooter with a pretty poor narrative. Mm-hmm. I hope that they go, they take what the bones that they've made already with Borderlands 3 and flesh out the narrative, make that the star of the show.
Well, that's kind of my thing, because I think I wish I clicked with Borderlands more. Weirdly, I actually clicked with Borderlands 3 the most, because I like the ground slide, like heavier and weightier the weapons were. But yeah, if they did something that was more character-driven and made that sort of, you have this campaign that is, I don't know, a single player, because I guess they wouldn't want to get too far away from the squad-based stuff or letting you drop in, drop out. But
well, I'd say that that's one of their biggest selling points is the fact that you have that couch co-op thing still remains within the Borderlands franchise because of their insistence on having like friends together shooting down raid
actual
bosses and
split
stuff.
Screen.
It would be amazing if if we did say that the concept was within her own imagination, if it was her imaginary friends, that would actually be amazing.
Or that maybe actually,
or maybe that they switch out depending on which zone she's in. So if you go back to her childhood, maybe they're sort of like TNT strap bunnies or something that. And then you go forward into her real life and it's like guardian angel Rolands or something like that come down. That would be brilliant. I'd love that.
Kind of like Psychonauts style, just sort of bringing in different phantom versions of your thoughts.
Yes.
What was that dude with the tinfoil hat that was in the first Psychonauts?
You mean the tiny green boy? Yeah, Dogen.
Dogen's the
when he's that like, it's like, the the squirrels are talking to me, and they like blows up their heads. Like,
I am a big fan of Dogan. I doubt he's going to be in the sequel, but I'm just thinking Psychonauts based stuff because they're putting more gameplay for stuff out for it.
I'm so excited for that game, by the way.
I know it looks lovely. I mean, that game thing has been in development for like 6 years. I didn't realize that. I was watching I went back to Kobe Cat's videos last night. I was binging on some of them. There was footage of when they had Tim Schafer on stage back in 2015. I was like, man, that game is a long time coming.
Yeah.
But hopefully later this year. But yeah, the big old talking point is the overall conversation around the idea that Sony are making some of their former, at least perceived to be PS5 exclusives, now available on PS4, and the whole conversation around the necessity of the PlayStation 5. So we had a ton of questions submitted around that. So I've sort of just cherry-picked two or three. But I think it's an interesting conversation anyway. The question itself from Andy Taylor, who says, keep up the awesome work, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
One of the best podcasts around, with Sony now having two huge games that were supposed to be on PlayStation 5 as exclusives, or at least heavily hinted, now being on PlayStation 4 as well. Do you think this will affect interest in the PS5? Sawyer also, part of their question, was saying that it feels like a scummy way to drum up sales. Kill DJ95 said, sure, large IP like God of War really released 2 years after the generation has started. You know, there's just the general idea of, you know, God of War Ragnarok was said to be dropping in 2021. Obviously, it's been pushed to 2022. Mm-hmm. And we also know that Gran Turismo 7, which was literally listed as a PlayStation 5 exclusive, has now come into PlayStation 4. Yeah. What's your thoughts on this stuff? I have a very subjective, I don't know if it's selfish thought on it, where I just think, what the hell is the point in investing in new tech if you're going to release stuff for the old system? That's my thoughts on it.
This goes back to my age-old thing. I'm getting my soapbox out and I'm standing on it again. You don't buy things when they first come out. You wait a little bit for the ground to settle before you start building a house.
Were coming,
but this is the thing. I've said this and you've said this many times over. As much as we want to support these companies, we view them as sports teams. We view them as connections. We view them as an extension of our hobbies and ideals. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, these companies are not your friends. They might do things that seem like they're for the benefit of the player, but it's only to benefit their bank account. Yeah. They, of course, have drummed up interest in the PS5. They, of course, have made the scarcity issues even greater by highlighting again and again and again how difficult it is to get your hands on the hottest console around. And now they're saying, oh, the PS5 exclusives are coming to PS4. That information was with them way before.
That's my problem with it, is that they should have said
this is akin to Todd Howard coming out and saying that Fallout 76 just works, when he knew at that point that it didn't. Yeah. It is one of those things where it is a fabrication and a hope that you will be able to drum up interest in something that is at this point of time not in the fit state that it should be.
That's the thing that really annoys me about it, is you have a lot, because there's a lot of conversations doing the rounds now in terms of, you know, like, what is something like E3 for? What are all these different conferences for? And the reality that they are for investors and shareholders more than the players, more than the fans. That's just a base reality of the industry. That's always been the case for the last few years, but you've got more people talking about it now because E3 took a year off last year. And so, like, I get that, but like, there is that annoyance where they've said, you know, this is the PlayStation 5, these are the exclusives, this is the reason to invest. And that arguably just being a thing for shareholders and investors, and then you know, they drum up the interest in the system, obviously it flies off shelves, but arguably right now, I mean, you don't need a PlayStation 5. It's sort of the bottom kind of falls out of it. I mean, Returnal's great, Destruction All-Stars was a bit of a wash, Demon's Souls is fine, Ratchet and Clank's
out soon, you've got Ratchet and Clank coming out, but apart from that, it's only a handful of titles, really, isn't it? The thing is that what annoys me the most is that I know that this is now, or at least skeptically, I'm thinking this is going to inhibit the performance of God of War 2 or God of War Ragnarok, whatever you want to call it. We'll just call it God of War Ragnarok because that's the one that we've been seeing. And Gran Turismo, the new one, I feel like they're going to be held back because of the fact that the architecture of the PS4 has been shown to be ailing with the likes of Cyberpunk coming out and highlighting how difficult it was to translate one vision into something that is, let's all face it, is dead technology right now, or at least dying technology.
Or dying technology.
So why the hell are they then backtracking and saying, hey, look, this brand new two IPs that people are absolutely rabid for, especially God of War, after how colossally impactful the first one was, to go back and say, hey, look, now we're going to be putting this on the PS4. Great if you're a PS4 fan, but that means that we're not going to see anything beyond what the PS4 can do.
But also, I mean, like, it came out this morning, there's a write-up on Video Game Chronicle by one of the developers who, he's now working for VGC, but he used to work on Yooka-Laylee, and he was just saying about the, as far as he knows, from the insiders, God of War, Ragnarok, God of War 2, and Horizon were always developed on PlayStation 4. It's not a new thing. Obviously, it's new to us as the public, as we're finding out from this PlayStation blog, but they always knew from day one that this game was going to be cross-generational. They just didn't say it, which again is very shady because it comes across as get the PlayStation 5 to play this new thing, and both those games were always going to be on PlayStation 4, which in itself is a weird business move on Sony's part, because Jim Ryan was all, you know, we believe in generations, we're going forward, buy the new system, whatever, and they were, that seemed to be like a counterpoint to the way Xbox was going, because Xbox was all, we're catering to everybody. But if the reality was that your two newest games were always on PlayStation 4, you could have just led with that and just said, hey, don't worry guys, we're also giving you these new games, but also here's some new IPs we're looking into going forward. I just think that the whole thing's been so messily handled. But also something else that came from that VGC report, the write-up, the opinion piece from the Yooka-Laylee dev, was him saying that, you know, the reality of game development is that you are factoring in the hardware at all times. So it does limit ideas. It does get in the way, which was something that one of Remedy's developers said on Kind of Funny as well, just that, you know, when they were making Control, they are aware of, you know, you have to develop for the lowest SKU. So something like the Xbox Series S does, quote unquote, get in the way of being able to maximize what a PS5 or a Series X can do. Which it is subjective. Sorry, it is selfish. It is subjective to some degree. Like, I can just say for my level personally, I want to see what developers can do with the best hardware. I don't care about curtailing to last year's system. I think that's kind of pointless in the long run.
In this scenario where we've just had people coming out saying, look, we're pushing back these games because we want them to be tweaked and perfected before we release them properly. Like, at that point in time, you should be saying, right, okay, let's just cut out the PS4 version. The PS4 version is going to limit what we can do. Let's spend this extra time, if we are in a position to like actually make good on our promises, and put extra bits in it. Let's make it so that the PS5 version is not just the definitive version, it's the only version.
Yeah.
The way carry series forward is if you evolve. I'm saying this as a PS4 owner. I don't have a PS5, but I don't want this to come out on PS4 because I want an incentive to actually move forward.
There's also the thing that the base reality, because it's always that thing of like, oh well, you know, what makes a PlayStation 5 version, and is it just going to be resolution, frame rates, you know, general stability, stuff like that. Like, that's one side of it. That's the most boring side of it to me. A generational jump shouldn't just be base refinements, at least as if you were getting a new graphics card or something. The reality of, like, you know, the way that you design games for the system involves, and this comes from Mark Cerny from last year's presentation, it's covered in the VGC piece, where the game dev was saying, you know, you factor in different AI scripts, different ways that levels are made, and the idea of the way that games have so many let's crouch sideways and get through the crevice kind of thing, because you're trying to hide a load, all of those things factor in, and so you can make better, bigger, more impressive and proficient games if you are, you know, aiming towards the SSD style technology from day one. So yeah, I think maybe Horizon Forbidden West and maybe God of War Ragnarok will blow us away and feel like genuine next-gen games, but I doubt it, because they're going to have very functional parts of those games also workable on PlayStation 4, which just feels weird. It feels like you might as well have just delayed the generation.
Yeah, I feel like if we'd just been given this information, it comes back to transparency. If they had just said, hey, look, we're developing these two games side by side for these two consoles, this is what it's going to be, none of us would have the problem with that if they had announced that at the time. But to feel like it feels like a backtrack, because they've clearly withheld that information until a point in time where the decision by many people to get a PS5 was already made. They've already made a sizable dent in the sales of PS5s. So at this point in time, they're kind of just like, cool, thanks, suckers.
Like, it's kind of like sitting here with a PlayStation 5, because obviously we got one through Sony themselves to do the review, but I also bought one because I was like, I want to own this thing.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of just sitting there with the new tech going like, okay, now what? And it's really cool to have the likes of Returnal and obviously Ratchet's coming up and stuff. But then for the rest of the year and next year, the two biggest IPs, they're on PS4. I know it's the most subjective 1% thing ever, but I do think it's a base reality of company sells you product that will do thing.
Yeah.
And thing is then available on old hardware. I think, like you said, it's an optical problem or a marketing issue, but they've fallen down in that regard.
Found it very, very strange that the PS5 is probably the only console launch where you can say that it will be at least another half a year to a full year before we have an actual library of games worth giving a damn about. And that is bizarre, because it's like everyone gave Microsoft absolute hell when they released the Xbox 360 because it came out with like Viva Pinata, Dead Rising, and that was
Crackdown
it for
was
months.
Good,
and Crackdown, yeah, that was it. You had three games, and maybe Gears of War, you had like four games, but they were within like months of each other. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, they Microsoft's like, cool, let's get some games on it. Boom, here's all the like.
The
library.
Thing as well is like, I don't personally agree with this defense, but I'm seeing this defense be passed around as in, you know, the eighth generation didn't get off to a very good start. We didn't really get next gen, eighth gen games until 2015. So, but that, you know, 2014 was a complete wash. The best game of that year was PT, like for the most part. Maybe Shadow of Mordor, but it was, you know, or Dragon Age Inquisition, but they're not really up there. PT
is a
game of the year. And the defense for this current situation being like, well, you know, it took the eighth gen quite a while to kick in. For me, that's emblematic of why it shouldn't repeat history. You should have learned from that. You've had plenty of time to prepare. I think it's a big old ongoing conversation. There's a lot of different point of views. I get the whole side of it where, you know, some people just can't get the system. But the sales data says that the PS5 is outselling where the PS4 was at this point in time. So it's not like... You know, it's not like we expected PS4 games to be on PS3. That just seems like an insane thing.
All I think of is I just go back to that South Park episode where Cartman buys the theme park and he's constantly just telling people that they can't come in, and that's what makes them want to come in even more. It just feels like, we can't get you a PS5. Oh, I'll pay through the nose for it. I'll pre-order. Yeah. I'll pre-order like 10 months down the line just to get one. It's like... Mm-hmm. Supply and demand tactics.
Maybe all this stuff does go some way as to addressing the scalper problem by just sort of like quelling the demand a little bit and just saying, okay, guys, calm down. It's okay.
Yeah.
You can play this thing on the PlayStation 4. Next year is when we're all going to kick in. Because obviously there is a whole reality of this that we have just gone through 2020, and it's on a country by country basis in terms of reopening stuff. But a fascinating general talking point, because never before have we had a generation star and then have so many different, so many top tier games that encouraged you to buy into that generation, then be available on the hardware you already have. Mm-hmm. I think that's a weird sort of thing. We did have a question from Willie Araya, who says, you had 60 seconds for a rant. It can be about anything, a specific part of the game, a whole game, something about the industry, this week's news, etc. I feel like we've almost pretty much tied into that.
I feel like that has been covered there. I mean, if we're going to open up the sack of things we don't like in
the
games.
The rant sack.
Bad checkpointing. I've been experiencing that. Do you know what? I've been playing an absolute gem of a game. This actually is born from a really good game. And I'm not saying this has bad checkpointing, because I actually think it's really, really good. But it just reminded me of games that have bad checkpointing.
Okay.
You like Ghosts and Goblins, don't you?
God, I haven't played that since I was a kid. That I want to like that game. I liked it when I was a kid.
It just doesn't like you.
It doesn't like me at all. It's really not a fan. No, I couldn't get past hardly any time in that.
I just picked up the Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection on PC, and my God, guys, I'm not just like being sponsored by them, but I would say like definitely go and check it out if you like your sort of old school platforming games. Like, that has checkpointing really well, in that it shows you exactly where the checkpoints are on the map before you even like go into it. So you go, oh, cool, I know where if I get to the end of this stage, I'm close, I'm very close. And it will always do this thing where it will immediately go like back to your checkpoint, and even if you exit the level, it will let you jump back in from that checkpoint again. So it's very, very nice. Mm-hmm. It's fair in that sense, but there's one bit in the very first level that just absolutely screws with you. And you have to go down this hill, like you're sliding down a hill, right? You're being chased by Firebrand, the red demon. Right. There's a chest in front of you that if you break it open, the magician comes out and turns you into a frog. You've got to jump onto a log, right? And then jump off the log, and then that's where the checkpoint is. So you can see the checkpoint in that one screenshot. It shows you exactly where you've got to go. Mm-hmm. The problem is you've got all those things going on, and the log is moving back and forth. And sometimes when you jump, if you jump before the log has got to a certain point, it will go back again. Oh. It will recognize that you've jumped in
and then
the
you're
air,
back and, to the other. The half
and then
a level
kicked,
ago.
Yeah, you get kicked all the way back to the beginning again.
I would have to rage quit that. I can't. Like, I would completely join you. Bad checkpointing is the thing that makes me give up on a game fastest. Mm-hmm. If a game can't respect my time in regards to putting me in the area where the thing happened, that is infuriating. I mean, I'm still going through the Mass Effect trilogy, Mass Effect 2, and that game is mostly solid with its with its checkpoints. But if you do a lot of the side missions, it tends to class that whole area as one checkpoint. So if you're playing
if you die, you're right back.
Yeah, if you're playing on higher difficulty, which I'm trying out. out the higher stuff like veteran and insanity this time, then you get shot at the arse and you're back to the beginning again. It's just like, just put me there. You already loaded it, game. Just let me go back to where I was. But not to worry. Next question, which is a follow-on from what Sawyer said earlier, where he sort of chimed in saying about the, you know, it feels like a scummy way to drum up release dates and sales and stuff for the PS5. He said his main question is, what studios do you want to hear from at E3? So talking studio-specific stuff. Monolith, Hangar 13, and Warhorse are their picks, but hope that we're both well and have a great weekend. Well, same to you. I hope you're
Thank you very much.
As well.
Yeah, I hope you're doing well, mate.
I want to hear the new Naughty Dog game. Now, I know that Sony's not there. Mm. I know that we're sort of just rolling in Sony stuff because it's that time of year where IGN have said that Sony have something in mind for the E3 season. And I think it'd be weird if they don't do anything at all. I think if I was Sony, I would wait, let E3 get out the way, and then be like, hey, by the way, there's a State of Play live stream right now. Hey, guys, come on in, and then do some big thing. So I want what Naughty Dog are doing next. We know that they're remaking The Last of Us. Last of Us Part 3 has apparently been sketched out, but I don't want that. I don't want more.
You just want a new IP.
I want a new IP. I don't want more dour stuff. I love Last of Us for what it is, but I want something cheery. I want their sci-fi
what you
IP.
Want? You want Jack X Combat Racing 2. That's what you want to announce. You want to just stand out there and proud.
They can't do a Crash Jack crossover, but that is a long time. Do a Crash Team Racing crossover with Jack and his little buggy with Daxter on the side.
Yeah, that'd be great.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Quick question, actually, because I've got you here as an older gentleman like myself. Where's Jack and Daxter rank on your Naughty Dog franchises? Because for me, it's right at it's not the top, but it's also not the bottom. Although it's a hard thing.
I've got a bit of a complicated history with the Jack and Daxter.
That's what I'm finding out, is that people don't have reverence for Jack and Daxter, and I thought they did. I certainly do, I grew up with people who did, but
so Precursor's Legacy is one of my all-time favorite games. Uh-huh. Absolutely loved it. Because of the fact that I had a sense of ownership, like I bought that as my first PS2 game. Like I loved that game to absolute death. I thought that it was a very immaculate platformer, had loads of great ideas, and it was just Naughty Dog just running on full cylinder. Then Jack 2 came out, and everyone I know says that this is the be-all and end-all. It's like
Jack
platforming
2.
Meets Grand Theft Auto. But the problem is that I just don't like it. It's just too edgelord for me. It's just like, I went the first thing that Jack says when he's like, I'm going to kill someone or I'm going to tear someone. I was like, Jack, seriously, you haven't said anything. And this one sentence made me hate
I'm
going to
kill Baron Praxis. Yeah, the first time when I went through that as a teenager, that was because that was that whole... post-Attitude Era, but then also gaming's Attitude Era, where all of a sudden Prince of Persia had his dark sequel, Warrior Within.
Yeah, just like they just found the mascara. They just went to town on it, didn't they? It's just like goth boots at dawn.
I loved that as a teenager, but you are right if you go back to Jack 2 and 3 now, especially 2, and it's Jack himself
cringy, isn't it?
Is very like, I'm going to do this thing, and I'm just kind of like, I love that for what it is. My thing is gameplay, though. Jack 2 is like up there.
Then we got Jack 3, and a lot of people I know were like, oh, it's not as good as Jack 2. I didn't really like it as much. But for me, I was like, oh, it's Mad Max. I love Mad Max. So this is brilliant. So when we had like the vehicular combat sections, we had a lot more exploration going on. Like, I thought that was really, really good. The story was admittedly naff, but overall, I feel like it's a series where the stories got better, but the gameplay got more varied and maybe not for the better.
My thing in 3 is just that it was so easy to flip the cars over. So I was like having a really cool chase and I'd flip over. Bad checkpoints again. Got to do it all again.
Yeah.
That's the got the way for me. In terms of studios that you want to see at E3, in terms of actual companies who are confirmed, I'm going to go with Konami because also know Konami pulled out. I can't go with Konami.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I will go with 343. I want a Halo update. I want to know what the hell has happened there. Because they delayed it last year. We've had Joseph Staten come back in. We know that they're still on track for a December release day. And I want to know what the living hell is going on with Halo Infinite.
So who's actually going and who's actually announced their own versions of it? Because there's been a few people that have just said, nah, we're not doing E3, we're going to do our own version.
That's kind of the thing. So E3, the ASA, or the ESA, one of the two, who own E3, they cranked a lot of their prices up this year for the big return show. Apparently it was a six-figure number to get a booth at E3, which is ridiculous. So you've got Nintendo and Microsoft Xbox are going to be there.
Yep.
Square Enix is still there, Sega, Capcom. You've still got, I think,
Ubisoft's going to be there.
Ubisoft are going to be there.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So that's what I want then. I want Ubisoft's new lineup to come out because you know that I've said many times before that I'm pseudo boycotting them at the moment. I don't play any of their games. Mm-hmm. They have appealed to me, but I just don't want to support them until they sort their stuff out at the very top of the chain. And unfortunately, after reading some reports, it doesn't look like much has actually changed.
No.
So I'm hoping that their fresh leaf new start is going to happen at E3 with them being like, right, this is what we were, 2021, let's all move on, everyone. This is the new
Ubisoft. IPs or something. Yeah.
That to me would be the step in the right direction to actually address complaints and all of the allegations, but move forward with the games, not just go, hey, look, we're going to lean back on our regular IPs and just crank stuff out and enjoy your sludge and hope that you forget about what's happened. That'd be nice. Them and Devolver, are they going to be there?
Yeah, Devolver should have their own showcase, I think.
I mean, of course, they're going to be entertaining. Every single game that they kick out has had some ridiculous addictive gameplay element that means I think that I've probably bought nearly every single Devolver
pretty much
game.
They've had a hell of a run, like going from sort of like using Hotline as a bit of a springboard, and they're managing to do like all those really cool E3 conferences and everything. I'm curious what they do as their return show, because obviously this year is already a weird digital show anyway. There's kind of like an award show tagged on to the end of it, which is kind of like E3 trying to contend with the Game Awards. But the rumor with that is that they're going to do publisher specific awards, which feels like it's completely paid for. I mean, it will be by the publishers.
So it'll be like EA's narrative.
EA's best football game or most innovative mechanic.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the company that wanted to do info Q-tainment and social chits and trying to, you know, get celebrities to announce
this, ladies and gentlemen, this is just the sign that these companies, they don't dictate what we like. Just let them have their fun. Let them spend their millions and millions of pounds. Just don't buy into it. Like, if you can see something as transparently greasy as these people buying their own awards, just say, nice one. You've absolutely clowned yourself. Honk, honk, on the nose. Bye.
Get back in your car.
Yeah, get back in your clown car with your big shoes. Go on.
Yeah, E3 feels weird this year, but everything feels weird this year. But hopefully there's good stuff that comes out of it. Next question from Travis Nichols. Hello, my favorite podcasters. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, cheers, bud.
What's a personal thing that bugs you in otherwise popular games? I have an issue with third-person games that don't let you walk towards the camera. Strafing ruins immersion. Now, this is a hell of a take. Strafing ruins immersion.
That is
I guess people don't strafe much in real life.
No, I mean, the thing is that, like, if you or I were in a video game, I would spend about 90% of my time just going like, right, I'm going to slowly turn around because my back's giving out, my knees are a bit weak sort of thing. Whereas these guys, they're just kind of like spider crabbing all the way along, aren't they?
Yeah.
Just like...
The thing that annoys me in terms of if I press down on the analog stick, I do want my character to face the camera because I want to take some photo mode stuff. I want to frame the cam and then take a shot. I don't want to have my character continually sort of, like you said, like, do a weird half strafe motion.
I want to see in first person things. If you put a first person game in front of me, the first thing that I want to do is just go like, what shoes am I wearing? Like, I want to see my feet. I feel so disconnected from a game when you can just look all the way down and you just go like, right, okay, I'm just literally
just a floating camera.
Yeah, I'm a floating gun. I'm just floating around the hallways. And that's why all the enemies are like, shoot it quickly, shoot it, because it's a floating gun. It's like something out of Dark Place.
That's a hell of a shot. Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. I've never looked. Now that you've said this, it's breaking my head. I've never looked down, and I don't think any first-person shooter. Does the Doom guy have legs? Does Master Chief have legs?
I think the Doom guy has legs. I think Master Chief does. I know that Chell from Portal. I almost said Postal. Then it's a very different game. There.
Does that man have legs?
I don't know. I know that he can piss, so he must have legs.
There's a pee stream that appears as if from nowhere.
But it annoys me so much if you have like all of these things that's like, welcome to the world of like all of these new Tokyo, and it's like all these amazing like things going on. It's kind of like you play this man who's running around solving crimes with a gun, and it's kind of like, but do I have feet though? You've made this world that has like a thousand. Imagine like, for example, Kingdom of Amalur. Mm-hmm. They got on that writer, and I can't remember his name, Seth something. I want to say Seth MacFarlane, but it's not Seth MacFarlane.
It's not Seth MacFarlane, sadly.
Sadly, no. He made 10,000 years of lore for that game, right?
Oh, are you thinking of R.A. Salvatore?
That's the one. I was thinking of the toy manufacturer, MacFarlane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're thinking of the D&D guy, I think.
I got very confused there. This is what it's like to be inside my head. It's like a minefield. It's like anyway, right. He made 10,000 years of lore for that game. And it all kind of was brilliant. But imagine then if they were going like, oh, well done, you've created this amazing universe. It's got all of these amazing details about it. Mm-hmm. But it's ruined because I'm now clipping through the bloody scenery. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's all well and good, but your delivery isn't on point.
The thing that always stands out to me, and I adore No Man's Sky, as I will say every time I get a chance to, but even when you're in first person in that and say your character sits down somewhere, maybe on a chair or in No Man's Sky, you sit in the cockpit, if the camera is not aligned height-wise properly and you feel like you're looking out of your chest, feel like that throws me off. Where I'm just like, I appreciate you put a body in here, but I just, as soon as I'm realizing that my eyes are my nipples, it just doesn't feel right. So I need that to change. But in terms of the idea of strafing ruining immersion. Yeah, maybe. I guess, I don't know. I definitely want my characters to face the camera as much as possible.
Yeah, this is going to annoy me now. I'm going to notice this more in games.
Last question from Tristan Vetter, who says, I love E3, the E3 time of year, but do you guys feel like we need to temper expectations for this year's actual releases? There will be a lot of games shown, but likely for 2022 and beyond. Yeah.
100%. Yes. I feel like we've kind of covered this before, just that it's going to be a very different year for E3. And I think that while it's going to be very, very easy to get hyped about a lot of new titles, I bet you anything that these are going to be teasers more than actual like full-on gameplay demos and vertical slices, because you've got to look at the year that we've just had, a year and a bit, because people haven't been able to be together. There's probably developing studios that aren't able to coordinate properly. They will probably be able to knock up some of the best looking trailers and teasers that we've seen. I don't think that we're going to be seeing anything substantial this year. Basically be like, here's a name, 2022.
Yeah, bam. It's gonna be a lot of Metroid Prime 4 style stuff. Actually, to revisit that question of who do you want to see, I want to see Nintendo. I want to see Metroid Prime 4, Bayonetta 3, Breath of the Wild 2. But yeah, next question from Haley from Raccoon City. What's the best game for
non-gamers? Sorry, from Raccoon City, calling
just
in.
All the way from Raccoon City. Raccoon City. Batting away the zombies at the window to send this question in.
Yeah, she's like typing there just, in the little like free internet cafe. Just like, get away, get away.
Dropping into kendos. What's the best game for non-gamers? Their pick would be Mario Kart. Everyone loves Mario Kart.
That's a great shout, actually.
I think we covered this a little while ago, but I think that I was listening to Chris Maldonado talk about it on Sacred Symbols, and he was saying that the general way to go is to favor 2D stuff, because you have to think of the way that we've gone through gaming over the years as well. And that you want to start on 2D stuff, because that tends to be the way that you get used to, you know, how high a jump should be or how fast a turn should be, or whatever. And then, like, I think we talked about this on another UBP, but I remember getting used to 3D cameras and how that was a weird mind F anyway. So I think you kind of want to start someone out on 2D stuff and build them back up the same way that we would have done.
Yeah, 100%. I think... alongside the Mario Karts, maybe look towards like the Rock Band or Guitar Hero games, because on their easiest setting with the no fail option, it's so much fun just to get a group of people together. Mm-hmm. They don't need to be musically talented. They don't even need to be good at the game. As long as they can hit like one or two buttons and the rest of this track plays out, they'll feel empowered from it. And I feel
that's actually
the sense of empowerment is the greatest way to hook somebody into it. Everyone talks about like gameplay loops, about getting loot and about beating bosses and stuff like that. That's important for gamers, TM gamers, but it's not important for casual gamers. What's important for them is fun, and fun usually comes from doing well at something.
That's a whole other wing of like the valuing interactive entertainment, like the timing side of it, the feeling of like you are controlling the entertainment side of it, like the gameplay loop kind of thing. Well, actually we'll shout out Fuser, which is Harmonix's newest one. I sent you a link because Fuser came out at the end of last year. It was £60, which is ludicrous. And it just made people run the other way, but it is a bit more discounted now. Again, we're not sponsored by anybody, but I did pick that game up because it does have a free demo on PlayStation. And just to shout that game out, that game is extremely cool. The sound, the technology that's in it, the software that lets you mix different parts of different songs, match tempo, and just it teaches you how to become a DJ in the way that even DJ Hero didn't.
So that clip that you sent me yesterday, you made that?
Ostensibly, yeah. I mean, like,
really cool.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. You look at it from a visual standpoint, and its gameplay demos didn't demo very well because it doesn't come across how much you're actually doing in the moment. Like, you are matching specific beats to drop something in. You're picking different discs. You can mute one track. Right, maybe you want to solo the vocals for a second and then slam everything back in as you drop a bass line under it, or bring the drums back in or whatever. Okay. It has lots of really cool things like that. And you can tell, like I said, it's Harmonix. So obviously, they're coming from Guitar Hero Rock Band. Putting a lot of their sort of music know-how into this really cool piece of software that just mixes all these different songs together. So if you want to have Billie Eilish's bass line right next to Hadaway's What Is Love, and then build up the drums and go into Darude's Sandstorm, then you absolutely can, which I did. But just to throw that thing out. But yeah, in terms of the non-gamer stuff, in terms of a specific game, if I bring it back to 2D stuff, I was going to say Super Mario World, but I find that giving that game to people, as much as it's Mario, it's hard. It's too hard for a first-time gamer because checkpoint-wise, you're kicked back to the start of the level, even if you're at the end when you die. So I actually think it might be the first Sonic, because I think that that's more forgiving.
Yeah,
that might be crazy to throw out the old Sonic.
I mean, at least in Green Hill Zone, you have like a very easy ride. I mean, each level takes about sort of between 30 seconds to a minute to do, if you're like running full pelt and you don't actually need to have like that much coordination. It's just like run, jump occasionally. It does get very difficult after that, though. I think you might be saying,
as I said that, I was like, oh, the checkpoint in Sonic does still kick you back to the start, but I find that the level's a little bit easier. I don't know. You can't really go wrong. Either the original Sonic the Hedgehog or Super Mario World, if you had access to either. Next question from Derek McMullen. Are you having a giraffe? Jules, you
revived
your wrestling show, but now with me instead of Phil. What match or pay-per-view are you using to get me excited? What do you want to see? Also, what do you want to see in the newest WWE wrestling game?
Oh, thank you very much. It's good to keep the wrestling side alive. I was actually joking about it the other day. Because as we were saying before, the gaming industry's had a bit of a lull over the last couple of months, and it's only now just starting to pick back up. And I was absolutely pissing myself because I was there like, oh, what's there to cover today, like in terms of games and news and stuff like that? Oh, not that much. But, you know, Scott and Josh doing an amazing job as always. And then I look over to the wrestling side and it's kind of like, zombies! This guy's eye is being poked out. This guy nearly died. This guy's been let go and he's like the most popular person. I'm just kind of like, wow, this is literally like a soap opera versus what we've got to deal with, and aren't we? Like, no wonder get like all the news views that are like through the roof. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. Wrestling as an industry, like the weekly sort of shows, barely abated. I don't think they took any weeks off, even when it was
no, not really.
Kind of found a way to keep going, but yeah, that giant giraffe head, I think, is still in storage. I think that's
The building. It's at the office, isn't it? It's in the office.
I think it was saved. We had a scorpion bust head and a few other different bits and pieces. There's a Crash Bandicoot figure and stuff, and I'm pretty sure the giraffe head is amongst them. So yeah, what match or pay-per-view are you giving me to get excited? Keep in mind, I'm an Attitude Era boy.
So what have I got to get you excited about, though? Because this is the important question.
I guess we're going to do your old wrestling show, which is the one you did with Phil. So I don't know if that was a review.
Okay, so insane things in wrestling. So what am I going to get?
What can we both go over that was the most ridiculous thing? I'm possibly thinking Paul Bearer being buried alive.
That is very, very ridiculous. But there's been a recent one with the AEW with there was Jon Moxley, who is Dean Ambrose.
Is he? And, oh, okay.
He's the one that was in a lovely to the death match, or a death cage match, electrified fence. It was something death match.
Anything that
sounds extreme, right?
Yeah, anything that channels ECW, I'm back in.
Well, the reason you'd want to watch this is for the ending, because his opponent covers him. And you think it's like counting down. There's going to be this massive explosion, because they've been building to it all match. They've been saying that the ring is rigged with explosives, oh, Scott. God. And it literally just goes like that. It's just like little tiny little spooter of just absolute guff that
comes
out. Was
that meant to happen? Was that like a joke finish? Or that...
We're not entirely sure, because afterwards they were like, no, that was intentional. It was just meant to look like crap, because we're going to write them as being friends now. And then it was just like, but okay, right? But that's not what we wanted to see. I'd make you watch that match just for that ending.
I'm very much up for that. Is Moxley the guy that's kind of like a Steve Austin analog? I only have reference points from...
He was Dean Ambrose in the WWE. So he was he was called the Lunatic Fringe. And oh man,
that's what I was called before I got my haircut.
No, I'm just laughing because of the fact that one of his moves is literally he bounces off of the middle rope, right, and then comes at you and hits you with a clothesline. They called it the Wacky Line. I hate wrestling, man. I love it to death, but it's just like, it's one of those things where, like, in hushed circles is it talked about with such reverence, but as soon as somebody comes along who's like a football fan, he'd be like, what are you guys talking about? Nothing sports. Well, it's not wrestling, like
professional sports, not the Wacky Line. I got back into wrestling in terms of the video games, because I started playing way more Fire Pro, which another franchise that just, I feel needs to be way up there, if not surpassing the 2K stuff, because it's a wrestling franchise that actually prioritizes putting on a good match. Like, I love the way the mechanics work in that. I don't know if you've played Fire Pro Wrestling World.
I
love that whole thing where it's like they counter automatically, so it's all about spots and like setting those things up. It's so cool.
I do enjoy that game a lot. If you're looking for another wrestling game to get you in the mood, just in general, for get you hyped up, Saturday Night Slam Masters is an absolute gem. For the SNES, it is absolutely brilliant. It's got it's got a cameo of Hagar, don't know how you pronounce it, from Final Fight.
You know the mayor, the big lad. Yes.
Yeah, who wears the dungaree strap overall strap thing. He is in that game, which is great. So get a little crossover there. But it basically is just like loads of people from around the world that kind of look like Street Fighter 2 rejects all getting together to have a big wrestling match. It is brilliant fun.
What more could you possibly need? And with that, we will round out the Untitled Partner Podcast, the UBP. Thank you to everybody for sending in your various thoughts, questions, whatever else how you have on your mind. We'll ask you again next week, and we'll just see what happens. This time next week, it'll be E3 season. It'll be full-on E3. Yeah. Event or whatever, because I'm sure it's a 4-day, 5-day event at this point. But we'll catch you then. For now, this has been Go On, Mr. Jules.
Well, I was going to say, for next week, I want you to answer a question for us. So put your questions for next week, but start it with the title that you are most looking forward to at E3. Yes. And then we'll go through and say whether it was a winner or a loser or didn't even show.
Well, I guess this time next Friday, we'll be right on the cusp of things coming out. So we'll wait and see whatever we can announce. But yes, we'll figure that all out this time next week. For now, this has been the Untitled Banner Podcast. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.